first offense.
All the mix. Okay, party people in the house.
May I have attention, please?
In a moment, the beat will be played in many parts. Many parts. Very.
Glide,
and let your backbone slide.
And welcome back to the Blue Jays Plus podcast from Prince George, British Columbia. I am Ewan Ross, and you are?
Gideon Turk in Thornhill, Ontario.
This week on the show, we will be discussing a bevy of roster moves from the last 2 weeks since we missed last week. We will be talking about Dustin McGowan's shocking return to the mound, Roberto Osuna's setback, Ricky Romero, and what the team has screwed up brutally with him, the Jays' new lineup, Adam Lind's new approach, and an interview with Bleacher Report's Will Carroll. So starting off, we have Ricky Romero coming back up to the team, throwing two games and then completely crapping the bed in the second game and being sent back down. Since he's gone back down, he's been basically as bad as you could imagine. So what do you have to say about this?
I think it was a complete mismanagement on the Jays' part once again. We've been talking about it. We've talked about it probably 3 or 4 times already, how their roster management, Anthopoulos' roster management, has not been great this year. And they might have just ruined his career.
Well, I have doubts as to what his career would have
maybe,
been.
Maybe he already ruined his career, but yeah. They didn't give it a fair chance to get back to to what he was.
They had a plan out of spring training. He was going to go down to the minors, and he was going to fix his mechanics. And then, like, 3 starts after being, he pitched how many games in the minors? Do you have that up?
He pitched 1 game in the minors.
Oh, that's great. So he pitched 1 game, and then he's back with the team just because we have 1 injury in our rotation, or I guess 2, but whatever. I mean, not only was it bad for Romero's long-term health or career, it also hurt the team. We had a bunch of guys who could have come up and given us, you know, 5 or 6 innings, like Ramon Ortiz has done in the past, in his last 2 starts, I think. Could have gone with Dave Bush, could have gone with anybody. But no, we went with Ricky Romero, who we'd all seen fail, and he wasn't ready to come back. And it's as simple as that. It was a big mistake, in my opinion.
And now his confidence is completely shot, and now he's walking 13.5 batters per 9 in Buffalo.
Yeah, he's cooked. I mean, I don't think we'll ever see him pitch for the Jays again.
Do you know what his strikeout-to-walk ratio is in Buffalo right now?
I'm thinking the walk to strikeout ratio might be more appropriate, but go ahead, tell me.
0.09.
That's 0.09. Oh no, I thought you said 0.9.
No.
Oh. Yeah, he's done. He's cooked. We're on the hook to pay him $15 million more.
I think 21.
Oh, awesome. Just keeps getting better and better, and that's just poured down the drain.
No, another 15. You're right.
15, yeah. And
plus another $6 million or $600,000 buyout.
So,
plus whatever's left over this year.
The one thing I'll say is that even as bad as he's been, we've seen pitchers this bad get traded, like Jonathan Sanchez last year, going from the Royals to the Rockies.
I don't recall Sanchez having a salary like this.
No, it was only 1 year left.
Yeah,
so
okay.
Whatever. Just kiss him goodbye. We're never going to see him again, I don't think. So
maybe he could become a hitter or a semi-hitter like Rick Ankiel.
Sure. Let's dream on that for a while because, God, not doing us any help on the mound. So transitioning from that, we have the Jays' many, many, many roster moves over the past 2 weeks. Starting off with...
Will we ever have an episode where we don't have to have a roster move segment?
Probably not. I would like an episode where we don't have, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 seven roster moves. That's a lot.
One of them that, we should have 1 week that just does not involve Edgar Gonzalez.
Well, I can guarantee you we won't have Edgar Gonzalez anymore because he's not with the team anymore.
You never know.
Yes, we could reclaim him on waivers after he denied. Anyway, so starting off with Jay Happ going to the disabled list after, you know, getting hit in the head. Like, what a pussy. Like, walk it off.
It's not even his head that's hurting. It's his knee.
I know. What the hell? But so he goes to the disabled list, and as a result, we called up. I think that's what called up Romero, correct?
No.
No, that
was, I don't think so. I think that was Gonzalez who was called up.
So we called up Edgar Gonzalez, who pitched one game on this go-around, relieving Romero in his dreadful whatever. And he was then sent back down to the minor leagues, and he rejected the move and has since been released from the team.
And signed with the Astros.
Yep, back with the Astros. He's just on that, you know, merry-go-round around there. So, after he was sent down and Romero was sent down, we called up Ramon Ortiz and Mickey Story. Ortiz was up with the team earlier this year and is a former very good starting pitcher with the Angels, but that was, you know, almost a decade ago. Since he's come up, he's had... he was very good on whatever day it was where him and Story actually went the distance.
Yeah, he's been fine.
It was very strange seeing us almost 10-run rule the Rays with Story and Ortiz on the mound. Oh, sorry, it was the Giants. But then we had Rajay Davis go to the disabled list with a leg injury of some sort, I believe.
Oblique, I'm pretty sure, yeah.
Yeah, it's an oblique injury, which always linger and...
The Jays said, I think, 3 to 4 weeks, so add on 7 or 8. And...
Yeah, at least they're not saying, because you always see the oblique injury. The players never think it's a big deal because it's just a little pain in their side, but it always lingers. So that's trouble, especially for him going into free agency. And with him going to the disabled list, we called up Chad Jenkins to essentially take Josh Johnson's spot in the rotation.
Back to the 8-man bullpen.
Back to the 8-man bullpen, and almost technically a 9-man bullpen, but not quite. So did you see Jenkins start on whenever that was?
When was that?
You know, Wednesday or Thursday or something like that, against the Giants. He looked pretty good.
I didn't see that.
He's not going to get a lot of strikeouts, but ideally he's a ground ball guy. You know,
it was a Sunday I saw that. It was against Boston.
That's right. You know, he's never had more than 5 strikeouts per 9 innings in the past 3 years. So he's a guy who's going to have to get by just getting ground balls, which he's not even all that good at. So I'm concerned about him in the long run, but... I'd rather see Jenkins up than Ricky Romero get another shot, so...
I really liked what I saw from Jenkins, actually. He's keeping the ball down and hitting the corners. I'm just remembering this now. He was hitting the corners a lot.
Yeah, and he's got good control. He doesn't walk people very much, so that's what he's going to have to do to be effective. Doesn't have a lot of upside, but we'll take what we can get right now.
Yeah. And our latest roster move was today.
Yes, we picked up Thaddeus Weber from the Padres, who was knocked off the 40-man roster, but he still has options left. So he is headed down to Buffalo. He's another guy as a reliever. He has a starting past. He started all throughout the minor leagues up until 2012 with the Tigers. He doesn't strike a lot of guys out. He doesn't walk a lot of people. So I'm actually fairly surprised that the Padres released him. He seems like a pitcher who is perfectly suited to pitch in Petco Park.
Yeah, I like his low walk numbers. And, well, I guess that's really all we have right now.
58% ground balls in 9 innings, and 80% last year with the Tigers in 4 innings. So huge samples, but don't beat the ball down, don't walk anybody, pitch to contact, kind of Minnesota Twins style pitcher. I think I'd like to see him up with the team instead of Mickey Story, even though he might strike more guys out. I don't know. It's a decent move. There's no risk to it. We don't have to carry him on the roster. He's just more pitching depth, because as we'll get into with Will Carroll, the Jays need as much of that as possible.
I'd also like to see him maybe above Brad Lincoln even. Who knows?
Possibly. I like Brad Lincoln. I just love watching that curveball. So who knows? Then, the most surprising return of the week. He's not back with the Blue Jays yet, but he has pitched... he has pitched 3 innings, 2 of them in single A and 1 of them in triple A, is Dustin McGowan. After at least 3 years of not pitching...
No, he pitched in the majors in 2011.
Yes, that's correct. He pitched 21 innings, so a full year off. But before that, he didn't pitch in 2009, he didn't pitch in 2010, and then he came back in 2011 and threw 60 innings altogether, and then didn't pitch at all last year. But he's back, and in his 2 brief minor league appearances, he has not allowed a run. He has struck out an awful lot of guys, and...
He's hitting 95 and 96.
Yeah, reports out at Dunedin in Buffalo was that he was... quite impressive.
He's eligible to come back on the 27th.
That's the latest he can come back, I believe.
No, that's the first day he can come back.
Because he's on the 60 day?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Because he could take a full 30-day rehab appearance.
Which would set him up somewhere in like the third week of June.
Yeah, which I think they should do. I think they should take it slowly with him. Because he's, you know, make sure he's as ready as possible. Because, I don't know. Have you seen anywhere? I assume that he is full-time relieving now.
Yeah, his starting days are behind him.
Yeah.
He's not doing that anymore.
I could see him being a potential closer, or at least having closer-level stuff, if we didn't have Casey Jansen necessarily. But he's been quite impressive.
Alex Anthopoulos says he's the best stuff in the organization.
Just like Sam Dyson.
That was John Farrell, though, so...
Oh, okay, we can't trust John Farrell, though.
Cannot trust John Farrell whatsoever.
I mean, from his days... The shocking thing is he's only really had 2 seasons in the majors, and one of those was shortened. You know, for all this buzz, he's been around forever, and he's always hurt. It's just amazing.
Yeah, it's a problem.
What?
It's amazing how he's still throwing 95, though, after all these shoulder surgeries.
Yeah, you'll see Rich Harden, and Rich Harden seems like a good comp for Dustin McGowan, even though Harden was a little better than him at his prime. And Harden's trying to make a go in the Twin system and not getting anywhere. Seems hurt again. But McGowan's a nice name to keep your eye on, because... we are going to need more pitchers. So then finally, before we go to our interview with Will Carroll, the very disappointing news this week was that 18-year-old Roberto Osuna was pitching in Lansing and doing very well as, I believe, the youngest player in the league. 12 strikeouts per 9, only just under 2 walks per 9. He was rolling. Apparently has a torn ulnar collateral ligament, which is what gets replaced in Tommy John surgery. This is very, very depressing news, because Osuna's upside was his readiness. He was reportedly very mature and knew how to pitch, and his body was ready to go. So he could have raced through our system potentially to start next year. But now... Now it seems like they're going to be going through a rest and rehab process, which is what we will talk about extensively with Will Carroll.
Which is almost over, because he is apparently healthy.
That is, have you seen any reports other than from just him about that?
I have not.
Yeah.
Search that up.
I mean, I looked around for it yesterday, and I only saw a tweet from him saying, I'm ready to go, I'll be, you know, 7 more days, I'll be back on the mound. And I don't have any faith in that whatsoever. I mean, the player's always going to think he's healthy, or he's always going to want to give it a go. And I just think that they should, as opposed to waiting, get it done now. He'll be back in time to get some time in next year and hopefully not delay his career too long. He's a guy I was really excited about. And much like everything with the Blue Jays, anything I'm excited about gets crapped on and goes down the toilet.
Yeah, the news came out when we're in the middle of, I'd want to say, a 3-4 game losing streak, so. Yeah.
Of course. I mean, just nothing goes well.
Being a Toronto sports fan sucks.
Being a Vancouver sports fan sucks, too. Like,
I hate Canada.
I hate Canada. Anyway, so after that crushingly depressing part, we will go to an interview with Will Carroll, which honestly isn't all that uplifting either. But let's go to that now. And now joining us on the Blue Jays Plus podcast is Will Carroll of Bleacher Report and formerly Baseball Prospectus. How's it going, Will?
Hey, it's going great. That's a long time of formerly, but glad to be with you.
How I know you. Anyway, so starting off, this week, Jays top prospect Roberto Osuna has apparently a torn UCL, but instead of going under the knife, he will be resting and rehabbing. I'm interested in knowing what the success rate is for this type of treatment and whether you think it's a good idea instead of just getting the surgery done immediately.
Well, there's a couple things there. Let's talk about the term torn in a second. But first off, let's note that this is the plan. The plan is that he's going to rest and rehab. This isn't like something he decided. This isn't something the team decided. This is a medical decision. This is the best possible plan. You know, there have been a couple times. This season, probably the best known one was Chad Billingsley. He had last season, he had a small sprain in his UCL. That's the ligament that's replaced in Tommy John surgery. He had some PRP therapy. They held him out, came back in spring training, had a good couple months, and then the UCL kind of let loose, and he's had Tommy John surgery. Johnny Venters of the Braves, same sort of thing. It's tough because, on the one hand, there was a period of time where things looked good, and then they ended up with Tommy John surgery. With Billingsley, the clock was working for him. If he'd had Tommy John surgery in last August, he would be ready for opening day of 2014. He had Tommy John surgery in April. He'll be ready for 2014. They didn't lose anything by, you know, waiting a while. So I think in situations like that, situations like Venter's, virtually the same thing. You take a look at the clock and you say, okay, if we do it now versus 6 weeks from now, what's the possible gain? Well, obviously the possible gain is you don't lose a year of your career. There have been players that have come back from this. The success rate is about 20%, and that might not sound very good, but remember, we're dealing with very, very small numbers. So, you know, if it's, you know, 1 out of 5, that doesn't sound that good, especially if you're not the one. If, you know, it's 20 out of 100, that's starting to sound a little better. And when you consider the value of a year, of, you know, any pitcher or of a pitcher's development, I think in almost all cases it behooves you to try to avoid the surgery.
Can you, when you say success rate, do you mean that they essentially never have Tommy John surgery, or at least don't have it for, let's say, 5 years?
5 years is tough. The standard that was used in the one study that's been done on this, and this was not a very complete study, it was 21%. It was a very small number of people. It was a study that I think looked at 3 years. I'd have to go back and take a look. And it was a retrospective study, so it's several years back. But yeah, you know, I think the success rate was getting them back pitching. So would Billingsley have been a success? Some might consider it that way. Some might see that as a failure. So it's tough. But again, if it's one out of five, that's one thing. If it's one out of 10, again, you have to at least try to avoid the surgery and lose a year, especially if there's really no cost to it. For a developmental pitcher, you know, I think what people have to understand is when there's a question, that means the sprain, the tearing of the ligament, is usually less than 25%. And that's, I mean, it's significant in the terms of the function, but it's a whole lot less than a lot of people think. It's not like this thing is split and they're just hoping he can go out there and pitch. This is a sprain that may well heal on itself. So it's a medical decision, not a, hey, let's play the odds decision.
Well, can you think of any examples of pitchers who have had it done and been successful?
The one that immediately comes to mind is Takashi Saito.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he's had it. There have been a number of pitchers in the minor leagues that have been able to avoid it. Saito's the only one that's coming to off the top of my head, mostly because he was the first that was a successful PRP guy. But there are a lot that have had, you know, very minor sprains of the UCL. And I think we have to understand, I said, you know, a lot of people think torn UCL. And the term tear is terrible because, you know, any sprain is a tear. You know, a very minor tear doesn't tell us anything. If it's below 25 to 33% tearing is where doctors kind of look at it and go, you know, I don't know. Do we fix it? Do we not fix it? And that's the area where in a lot of cases they go, you know what, let's just try to rehab it. Let's see what happens. Maybe things will be good. And, you know, maybe it works, maybe it doesn't.
It looks like it might have worked for Asuna. He tweeted on May 14th, I'm ready, I need to wait 10 more days and go back to pitch. So does this mean, have you heard anything? Is he ready and will he be back?
No, I'll be honest. I don't know the pitcher or the situation, so I really can't comment on that specific situation. I just don't. I wish I had time. Now, when we finally get to cloning, me number three will be focused on minor league pitchers.
Go ahead, Gideon.
Okay, can you give us a little updates on Jose Reyes and Josh Johnson? What are their status? When will they be back? Will they be full strength when they go back? Are they rushing it?
Well, they're certainly not going to rush it. You don't want to bring a player back too early and have him just re-injure himself. There's nothing more frustrating than that. With Reyes, he's a little bit ahead of schedule, last I heard, which is a couple weeks ago. You know, he's not at a point where he's running. He's just in the process of trying to get himself healed up, starting to work the muscle, get itself stronger. It's a very early stage of the rehab, and hamstrings are really difficult, especially for a guy with a long-term history like him. For Johnson, he's still in the rest phase. I haven't heard anything about him even doing light throwing, and I really don't anticipate that's going to happen for at least another couple weeks.
He's starting in Dunedin, I think, on Tuesday.
Oh, so he has been throwing. Yeah. I apologize. You know, certainly they've kept him on a throwing program then. Some of these I don't follow as closely until things start getting closer, and I didn't realize he was that close. That's certainly a great sign if he's getting ready to start.
My concern with him would be that they might actually try and rush him back since he's a free agent and the Jays are in sort of a desperate situation.
A little bit, yeah. You do have to wonder about that. You know, I take it back to a situation like CC Sabathia where the Brewers traded for him to try to make a playoff run, and I don't want to say they abused him, but they certainly used him to the utmost extent they possibly could. And Johnson's in a similar situation. That said, off the top of my head, I couldn't tell you who Josh Johnson's agent is, but I'm sure he's taking a close note of how they're doing it. It's one of those things where, yeah, they'll be pushing to get him back. I'm sure he's pushing to get back so he can prove that he's healthy. But the last thing that they want to do is, you know, have something go wrong again. Josh Johnson's history is just so dichotomous. On the one hand, he is phenomenal when healthy. The problem is he's just not healthy very much. And as big and strong and as good as he is, it's frustrating because you look at him and you think, oh, this guy's got the ideal pitcher's body. This guy looked so good last time out. And then, you know, when he breaks down, you remember that, yeah, he is human.
I can't imagine they're going to rush him back, because if they do rush him back and he breaks down right before the trade deadline, you can't trade him.
There's no way they'll trade him. There's utterly no way they'll trade him. The Jays are committed to this strategy of playing for this year. Even if it doesn't work, they could say they went for it this year. The idea that they could trade, I mean, I can't think of too many teams that would trade for Johnson in the first place, or at least give up very much for him. But I think the Jays are committed. It's not like they're out of it. This is a team. Paul Beeston the other day was saying the team still had plenty of time. Maybe things change by July, but I just can't see a scenario where they trade him.
I've been telling Gideon that for weeks.
I think they can get something for him, maybe.
Anyway.
And a month from now, if they're still 10 games back, or not even 15, never know. They're out of it.
Disagree. Anyway, McGowan.
Oh, yeah. Dustin McGowan being sent out on a rehab assignment. He was throwing 95 in Buffalo today. What should we expect from him? Are his starting days over?
Yeah, I'm very curious about that, because they were actually in town here in Indianapolis last week. I got to go out and see him. I was hoping he was going to pitch. He did not pitch during the games I saw. But he's an interesting case, because I think he's kind of the personification of the pitching problems that the Blue Jays have had. They just, for whatever reason, that team cannot keep pitchers healthy. It's not starters. It's not relievers. It's not right-handers, it's not left-handers, it's not young guys, it's not old guys, it's not one level, it's not shoulders, it's not elbows, it's pitchers. They can't keep pitchers healthy for whatever reason, and it's utterly stunning. You know, there was a year that I think they had one player injury, and yet they were in the bottom third of overall injury stats that year because they had so many pitchers injured.
Yeah, the Sean Markham, Dustin McGowan, I think it was Brett
Jesse Lynch.
Yeah, I mean, it was everybody. It was, you know, if you pitched for the Jays, you were injured. And, you know, I've waited for them to at some point, especially when Anthopoulos took over, to say, you know what, we're going to take a look at every, what's going on. Let's get some answers to this. Let's take a look at our medical program. Let's take a look at our pitching program. Let's take a look at our strength and conditioning program. And I'm sure they've taken a look at it, but I've never felt like they've seen anything, because they haven't made any changes. And yet, there haven't been any changes. This team still can't keep pitchers healthy, and McGowan has been kind of the personification of that.
Yeah, we're going to be talking about this later on in the show, just ourselves, that the Jays have been acquiring pitchers that have bad mechanics, and it's been going on for a long time through free agency, through the draft, and through trades.
But
and
yeah,
it's something they don't take into account, and then it would be stupid if they don't.
You got guys, DJ Ryan, and Sergio Sanchez.
Yeah, 20 something teams don't. You know, the Jays are an advanced team. They're a team that you would think would be at the cutting edge of biomechanics, especially with all the problems they've had, and they're not. I can't think. I mean, even with all the trades, there's probably one or two, but I can't think of one off the top of my head pitching for the Jays right now that has ever had a biomechanical study. They're not one of the teams that goes out and does all their pitchers. They're not one of the teams that has even done many of the pitchers. I'm not sure if they've ever done any, but certainly they're not one of the top four or five teams in terms of that. And that would be the easy way for any team, let alone the Jays, to get an advantage. And I think the Jays, more than many others, have had so many problems. That would be the kind of answer that is, A, cost-effective, and, B, one that might actually move them past all these problems they've had for the last decade.
How many teams out there would you say are on the cutting edge of biomechanics?
Well, I mean, you kind of got to define the cutting edge. How many teams are
looking at it?
Go ahead.
Or at least looking at it.
But a little less than half are at least looking at it and doing some. A lot of them are reactive, saying, you know, this pitcher is hurt, or we're worried about this pitcher. None of them are taking a look at it pre-draft. The draft's coming up here in a couple weeks. And Yeah, that's part of the problem of the system. We've got the NFL Combine and now the NBA Combine where they're doing all sorts of studies and medical checks and everything else. And if baseball had something like this, we could take Mark Appel and all the other pitching prospects and see exactly what's going on with them. Baseball doesn't. And most of the agents won't allow their players pre-draft to do that sort of thing. So nobody's pushed for it. There are only two teams that do every pitcher in their organization. They're probably about, I want to say 12 teams that have done some level of it. There are a couple of agencies that do a little bit, but it's more dabbling. So I would say, you know, of teams that are paying a lot of attention to it, two.
Which are?
Which are they?
Nope. Sorry, guys. Not
okay. No problem.
One of them we know is the Orioles.
Yes. Yeah, I'm aware of that. Okay. Being as a Jays fan, I find that a lot of the time you'll see the fan bases think, oh, we're so much more cursed, you know, with injuries or by the refs or by whatever degree. But the Jays are notably more injured than other teams?
Yes and no. They're notably more injured on pitchers.
Pitchers.
You know, I don't have the stats in front of me, but if you go back to my team health reports, both at Bleacher Report this year, SI the past couple years, Baseball Prospectus before that, I always published the previous year's injuries. And I know there are other injury databases that have been published out there. Not as they're perfectly fine. You can take a look at them and get a good general idea about it. The Jays have just been terrible with pitchers. They've been utterly phenomenal with position players. If they were just average with pitchers, they would be in the upper half, I think, the last 5 years. But they've just had, again, absolutely terrible luck. And I do want to say luck. I don't know of any one single thing that is wrong with pitchers. Like I said, it's at every level. It's right-handers, left-handers, starters, relievers, the whole thing. And it goes all the way back to guys like Chris Carpenter and Roy Halladay. And that's quite a ways back. They just, for whatever reason, whether it's luck, whether it's bad karma, whether they kicked somebody's dog, they just do not keep pitchers healthy. And they, you know, through a couple general managers, through a number of managers, even changing medical staffs. You know, George Pulis has been there quite a while as both head trainer and assistant trainer. But they have not been able to shake those results. And they don't have any more answers than I have on that.
Wow, that's frustrating. So, finishing up, R.A. Dickey doesn't have this UCL that we were talking about earlier with Roberto Osuna. How amazing is it that he can actually pitch? Because it seems, the results that I saw, was he shouldn't be able to turn a doorknob effectively.
Well, you know, what we don't know is when he lost it. Was it an injury? Was it something that happened, you know, early on in life that he was able to adjust? I don't think he consciously adjusts. He certainly doesn't remember it. He didn't know at the time when the Rangers discovered he didn't have one. He wasn't aware. He wasn't trying to hide anything. He just didn't know. And it's, you know, the joke is, you know, the dog didn't know that he couldn't climb the tree, so he did. He pitched and he adjusted. There have been other players, not in baseball, but in football. Garrison Hurst, who was a running back from Georgia several years ago, discovered at the combine he didn't have an ACL in one of his knees. And he was one of the top running backs, and he went on to have a pretty solid NFL career. His body had just adjusted, and that's exactly what he did. You know, if you or I snapped our UCL, the doctor would say, wow, you know, put some ice on it. You know, normal people don't have Tommy John surgery. And you know, obviously, most people don't snap their UCL, but in car wrecks, it's actually reasonably common just because of the way a lot of people hold the steering wheel in a wreck. But you don't replace it. You know, it's one of those where it's just really unusual, but I think it was either congenital or very early, and his body adjusted. And we've seen over the years that you know, he's been pretty good. You know, obviously not a great pitcher. Except for last year, and even pre
bowling,
even pre knuckleball,
Majors at the very least.
Exactly. And I think people underestimate the skill it takes to do that. So he adjusted, and it's one of those crazy things, but the body's a pretty amazing device. The other thing to keep in mind here, and this is a question that I don't think is answerable, we probably had a lot of pitchers pitching without a UCL.
Yeah, wow.
Before Tommy John surgery was created, there were a number of Frank Jobe, who did the first surgery, and he created the absolutely. He said to me in an interview that if I thought of this 5 years earlier, it would be called Sandy Koufax surgery. Now we know now that Sandy Koufax had a torn UCL, but we don't know when it happened. You know, what if it happened in 1962? What if it happened? You know, we just don't know. Did he pitch some of those great years without a UCL? Did he pitch some of those great years with a very fringy UCL, the same way that Nolan Ryan pitched the last decade of his career and the last couple no-hitters with a UCL that Jim Andrews wanted to replace? So it's one of those things that it's pretty amazing for Dickey, but it's not singular.
That was very fascinating. Anything else, Katie?
Nope, yeah. I'm good.
Great. Thanks for joining us, Will.
Hey, thanks a lot, guys. Don't sweat the technique. Don't sweat the technique.
So welcome back. We are now going to talk about, while I've liked most things that John Gibbons have done, the game two Thursdays ago, because we missed last week's show, so this is a bit delayed, I want to make a big issue with how he handled this game.
On May 9th against the Tampa Bay Rays.
Yes. So in this game, we were... This was a tie game, but we were ahead going into the seventh before Delabar relieved Dickey and gave up a home run to retie the game. Delabar continued into the ninth and into the eighth. In the ninth, Rodney came in, shut us down. We did not use Emilio Bonifacio.
That was my first problem.
It was my first problem as well.
It was the seventh, I believe, right?
It was the...
Henry Blanco reached base.
Yeah, so Henry Blanco reaches base to lead off the seventh inning.
Bonifacio was just sitting there on the bench.
And I understand if Dickey was going to continue in the game. But Dickey was coming out to start the next inning anyway.
And Aaron Sebia was coming in the next inning to pinch hit.
Exactly. You clearly want Aaron Sebia in there to win you the game. Unless somehow you think you're going to keep... That one-run lead is impenetrable. But Bonifacio is on the bench. He's not doing anything. And you have the slowest player in the league, potentially. Maybe Billy Butler can take him a run for his money. But Blanco on first base. Why not use Bonifacio?
Bonifacio's at third if you put him in.
Or at least on second. And, yeah, I mean, there were two fielder's choices in the inning. That's, I don't know. You know, you have Bonifacio steal second. You have DeDavis bunt him over to third. You got a guy on third base with one out, and Cabrera and Bautista, the hottest hitters on the team, coming up. That's a key add-on run that would have prevented the game from going into extra innings. Then we jump ahead to the bottom of the ninth, where Gibbons left in Oliver to pitch. And while nothing happened in that inning, I would question using Darren Oliver there when you have the best closer in the league this year, Casey Jansen, on the bench. Fine, no problem. We get out, we go into the 10th inning.
There is a problem there. I hate baseball.
Yeah.
Closers should not be saved. They are your best pitcher. Use them in the situation at need.
Sure. I mean, I have a problem with that, too. But then when you take Darren Oliver out to go into the 10th inning, and you bring in Aaron Loop, who I'm okay with, I kind of, I mean, I've sort of soured on him a little bit.
But if you're bringing in Aaron Loop, use him for what he's against. Use him against lefties.
That's the first point. So instead of bringing in Aaron Loop, they should have brought in Casey Jansen. I mean, obviously he's the best option, but they didn't. They brought in Aaron Loop. Aaron Loop gives up a double, gets the first two outs, and then gives up a double to Evan Longoria. You then have James Loney, who had a decent year this year, but the reason why he's had a decent year, as we discussed with Jason Collette 2 weeks ago, is because they're not letting him pitch again, hit against left-handed pitchers. And they intentionally walk James Loney. Like, what the hell?
I wanted to take my TV and just smash it. Like, there was no reason for that.
I was at the bar, and I was just fuming. And, I mean, James Loney has been a punching bag for every Dodgers fan in the world for, like, however long he was there. He was awful. Like, and Loop, with that low arm angle, he should be able to get bums like James Loney out.
I hate the intentional walk to begin with, and then you're intentionally walking James Loney, who can't hit lefties, and you have Aaron Loop, who lefties cannot hit.
Exactly. However, maybe, at the time, I was thinking, okay, he's intentionally walking James Loney, we got two righties coming up next, we're bringing in Casey Jansen. But no, we bring in Brad Lincoln, who I kind of like. I don't mind Brad Lincoln, but he's probably the worst pitcher in the bullpen at the moment, other than Mickey Story. Who I don't think was with the team at that point. And he then promptly walks Ryan Roberts and walks Luke Scott, so we got Shrimp off against the Rays. There were three. The game ended on intentional walk, walk, walk. And your best pitcher, and debatably the best pitcher in the American League this year, is sitting in the bullpen, twiddling his thumbs, doing nothing.
Not even. He was warming up.
Oh, man, really?
They didn't even bring him in.
We didn't have a lead, Gideon. You can't bring him in.
I hate life.
And while this seems like a really small deal, like it's only one game, who cares? At this point, the Jays can't afford to give up games like this.
And they gave it away. There was no excuse for that.
Well, maybe they wouldn't have won, but they wouldn't have lost like that. And you compound this with the game where they called up Romero, which was essentially a given away game as well. And you know, that's two games that this team can't afford to lose.
Against division rivals.
Well, yeah, exactly. It's so goddamn frustrating. I mean, we're 10 games back of the Yankees. And it's a good thing we got rained out today, because we'd probably be 11 games back of the Yankees, because we can't beat the stupid goddamn Yankees. Very frustrating. However, let's go from me being very frustrated with John Gibbons into a positive that I think he's done in the past week, which is change the lineup around. Our latest lineup has had Melky Cabrera leading off, with Jose Bautista hitting second, Edwin Encarnacion hitting third, and Aaron Sebia fourth, Lynn fifth, down the line. And I love this because the sabermetric way of thinking says you play your best hitter in the number two slot. And Bautista is a classic guy for that. He gets on base in front of the power-hitting Encarnacion, and you don't waste it by playing Bonifacio or Rasmus there. Do you agree?
I do agree. I actually have the book open in front of me, and if you don't... You are listening and you don't exactly know what the book is. It is by Tom Tango and two other guys, but Tom Tango is a genius.
We discussed him about Sullivan. He was working for the Mariners while they were making good moves, and fired since they started making bad moves.
And to summarize their batting order chapter, it says your three best hitters should bat somewhere in the number one, number two, and number four slots. Then your fourth and fifth, and then number three and number five, and then number six through nine in descending order of quality. So John Gibbons basically has it right. What according to the book, which is it's all marginal runs, or at most you can from this you're gaining one or two wins.
But you want it as best as possible.
Exactly. It should be Cabrera in the number one hole, Batista number two, Lynn number three, Encarnacion four, and I guess Aaron Sebia five.
I think I still like Encarnacion.
I like Encarnacion in number three because of how it's works out with Batista and Cabrera getting on base for him. But
yep.
The book says that. In this case, but I wouldn't go with the book. I'd go with what it is now, just switch Lynn and Aaron Sebia, which I know you like to see also.
That's my issue, is that to me, Aaron Sebia is not an ideal cleanup hitter for a couple reasons. First of all, it stacks three right-handed batters all in a row, and Lynn can break those up quite nicely. And also, Lynn is an on-base machine, which you want in front of Aaron Sebia, because all he's going to do is hit home runs, and get as many guys on base in front of that as possible.
Yeah, and I don't want him striking out with Batista and Cassione Cabrera on base.
Yeah. I completely agree. You saw a quote, speaking of Adam Lind, you saw a quote about him changing his mind about walks. I didn't see that quote. So walk us through that.
He didn't change his mind about walks. And just last October he said, I think the walk is a little overrated. Sometimes there's an environment around here that people want us to walk. You can't just do that with the pitcher you're facing in this league, in this division.
Wow. The Jays were advocating walks. That, I mean, from all that I read about our hitting coach last year, who I can't think of right now, who was our hitting coach last year? Dwayne Murphy.
I don't think he was really referring to Dwayne Murphy. I think he was talking about basically the fan base, I guess, in general.
Oh, that makes sense. Okay, yeah, sure.
And he's saying you can't just walk. And then all of a sudden, what is it, 4 months later, 5 months later, he's walking and getting on base over 40% of the time. And he's changed his entire approach. I was actually writing an article about it on Tuesday, then I took a break for a Jewish holiday. And when I get back, two articles have been written, one in Sportsnet, one in Bloomberg Banter. So that article goes down the drain.
I love it. You know, right now, what he's hitting right now, he's got a 286, 402, 476 line, which is a 381 wOBA, which is awesome and is one of the most pleasant surprises of this year. You know, for all the disappointment that the Jays have had, Adam Lind is certainly not one of them.
Yeah, in 2011, his swinging percentage outside the strike zone was 37.1%. This year, I guess, as of Tuesday or maybe Wednesday, last Wednesday, the 15th, I believe, it was 20.4%. So his approach has completely changed. He feels like a guy, I feel like he's a guy who's just like, you know what, I'm too lazy to do this, I'm just going to take every single pitch. And that's what he's been doing.
I have no problem with that, because what that did is that allowed him to get his confidence back together and start getting on base. Even if he wasn't hitting at the time, he's turned it around now. Now his, you know, he's
power
doing
numbers are showing. I think he's hit three home runs in the past week or 10 games or something like that.
He has. That's certainly true.
And you saw in the first like month or so of the season, he was getting walked a lot, and he wasn't making soft outs. He was hitting the ball hard, and you knew it was any moment that he was just going to break out.
Yeah, so now you've got a guy who's hitting very well to start the year, and it's not BABIP driven. BABIP is right around 300. And, you know, this is a positive sign, like a big-time positive sign for the Jays.
I guess we'll talk about this later in the year. If he keeps this up, what do you do at the end of the year? Do you pick up his option?
What's it worth?
It's a $2 million buyout, and I think $7 million option. I think you have to pick it up.
Absolutely pick it up, especially because I'm going to be looking ahead this year, this week, as to what the Jays have on the books next year. And it's not looking pretty. I was looking at the future next year, and it got me very depressed. Because not only does he have an option for next year, he has another subsequent option for the next 2 years after that, which, you know, he's not great value at $7 million next year, $7.5 in 15, and $8 million in 2016. But that could be a very useful player, and I wouldn't want to just cut him loose for nothing.
Yeah, for how many months, how many years has Alex Anthopoulos been saying that we just need one big power lefty bat in the lineup? Somebody who can get on base, somebody who can hit that those home runs. And if Adam Lind is that guy, it really solves a lot of issues.
Especially because there's not much coming.
Nope.
If you look at their minor league system, there's not a lot in the upper minors right now.
And there are no hitters.
No, especially
the Jays have not had the ability to draft hitters. Or trade for them, for that matter. I guess, aside from Darnell.
But yeah, they traded for him, but... whatever you want to talk about.
And it doesn't look like they could. There's anybody really a big power bat that they'll be able to draft in June. But we'll talk about that later, I guess, next week or 2 weeks.
Clint Robinson. Mauro Gomez. There are our lefty bats.
Jim Negrich.
Nice transition. Because our minor league player of the week is Jim Negrich, which I would not have thought I would have been saying at all. Because he was a minor league free agent who we signed from the Nationals this year.
Honestly, I didn't know who Jim Negrich was until probably the second week of April, first week of April. I guess people were hearing about him during spring training. I just didn't hear about him.
I'll admit I'd never heard of this guy before last week. You know, when there's 28-year-old second baseman in AAA, I assume that they're nobodies. And... anyway, so Jim Negrich right now in 141 plate appearances at AAA is hitting .390.
What?
With a .457 on base percentage.
When did it get below 400? This is so sad.
Yeah, because .390, not good enough. Not good enough.
It is not. Does not warrant a call up.
And a
send him to single A.
Yeah. And a .585 slugging percentage, which is a comical .461 wOBA. He's also walked as many times as he struck out. He's kind of doing everything you want, except I still have major doubts about him long term, because his BABIP right now is .429, which you would normally assume BABIP is generally in the 300 range. So, you know, that's not sustainable. That's going to come down.
And it has already.
It started to come down, yeah.
And
hence
his average is dropping as well.
Dropping. It's dropped to .390.
It was at .450 last week.
Yeah, yeah. But, so, exactly. That's showing that the magic pixie dust that he has, that the Buffalo Bisons have sprinkled on him, you know, is wearing off. However, I think we're going to see Jim Negrich at some point this year.
Yeah, Anthopoulos said if another outfielder has to go on the disabled list, which, because we are in Toronto, I'd assume would happen any day right now, especially with Cabrera and his legs.
Oh, my God.
If Melky stops hitting, then there's no reason not to disable him.
Let's talk about that for a second. I've never seen someone. He looks like he's 90 years old.
Yeah, Wilner tweeted... You're blocked by him, right?
Yes, I am.
Okay, so somebody asked him, would it be better to see Lind in left field right now than Cabrera? And he said it actually would be.
I agree.
I can't disagree. It's horrible.
Hey, I have a question for you. How old do you think Melky Cabrera is?
31.
Melky Cabrera is 28.
Really?
Yeah, and I saw this the other day, and I was absolutely stunned by it, because... he seems like he's been around forever, and he certainly looks like he's been around forever.
It's the hamstring, so I was watching a video clip of him last year just hitting triples and stealing bases. It's his hamstrings. If they don't get better, if they do get better, he'll be fine. But.
And they're not going to get better unless, you know, unless he gets some time off.
Which he will if he stops hitting, because there's no reason to keep him in the lineup if he's not hitting.
If he stops hitting, we're screwed, because he's one of the only guys hitting on our team right now.
But we still have Adam Lind, the savior, so.
But we need... Just things are so depressing these days. God. Stupid Blue Jays.
Stop giving us expectations. I wish the Miami trade never would have happened.
I'm largely in the same boat because...
I was joking, though, because we have Jose Reyes. And Jose Reyes is the best player in all time.
Yeah, I'll be writing an article coming up this week about how things look going forward. And...
Things are grim.
Things are grim. Things are bad. If you look at what they have in terms of young core players... There's one guy on the roster right now under the age of 26, and it's Brett Lowry, and he's not hitting all that well. And then you look at AAA, and there's Anthony Gose, who's hitting like crap as well.
And not even stealing bases. He's getting thrown out.
He's been thrown out as much as he's stolen. I just don't get it. Like, how does that happen? I can understand him not hitting, but, like, are his hamstrings screwed too? And then even if you look at Double A, there's not a lot in Double A other than maybe Sean Nolan.
Jack McGuire.
Yeah. Anyway, that was kind of me for the week ahead. What do you have for the week ahead coming up?
I want to write an article about Dustin McGowan. I think I have started it because I actually do not remember what he throws and what his stuff is like. And I'd assume others do not either. So sure. I think that'd be a good idea. And... I don't know, maybe I'll take another crack at Adam Lind, but probably not.
Yeah, so you have a nice happy story about Dustin McGowan and
I. Oh,
have...
I also have my Bison's month in review, I guess.
Yeah, Ricky Romero.
On Monday.
Ricky Romero.
That should be fun to talk about, write about.
Thaddeus Weber. You have to talk about Thaddeus Weber.
I will talk about Thaddeus Weber. Just for you.
Yeah, just for me.
If you are listening, I hope you... understand. His name is not Thaddeus Weber, it is Thad Weber, but what type of name is Thad?
I'm assuming Thad is short for Thaddeus, if not, nothing worse than normal. Who the hell names your kid Thad?
His parents.
Parents are stupid. Anyways. Looking at next week, I think we already have Craig Calcaterra of Hardball Talk booked to come on and talk about the Braves. And hopefully Kylie McDaniel to preview the draft. So that's what you look for next week on this show.
Jays this week.
Oh, Jays this week. Yeah, I forgot about that.
R.A. Dickey versus three-game series against the Rays and then a four-gamer against the Orioles.
Jake Odorizzi.
Making his first start.
Wow. Who got hurt?
David Price.
David Price got hurt. Depressing fantasy news. But Jake Odorizzi, I'm fairly excited to see him.
I have Chris Archer in the budget league. They skipped him for Odorizzi.
We're both cursed, buddy. We're both cursed.
I think I'm doing better than you, so.
Oh, no doubt.
Team. Second worst.
So he's an interesting guy. He was acquired in the Will Myers trade in the offseason. So we'll see what he has.
And he's no throw-in.
No.
He's not a throw-in at all.
He was a key element to the Zach Greinke trade going to the Royals. And then traded again with Will Myers for James Shields. So that'll be an interesting guy to take a look at.
You mean he was a key element to the Jeremy Jeffries trade?
Yes, he was a throw-in with Jeremy Jeffries in that trade. Then the next day we have...
I feel like I'm obligated to make a Jeremy Jeffries Rob Ford joke, but I'll save that for another time.
I think he might get a call. He's pitching really well in AAA.
Rob Ford?
No, not Rob Ford. Not Rob Ford. Because... Hey, at least Alex, no matter how badly Alex Anthopoulos does, at least he's not smoking crack with drug dealers.
How do you know?
That's a good point. Paul
Beeston. He looks like he does.
He kind of does. Anyway, Tuesday, we will see the stellar Ramon Ortiz.
Staff-ace Ramon Ortiz
facing off against Alex Cobb.
Who has been incredible this year.
He sure has. And then Mark Burley, who is starting to turn it around. I'm a little less negative on Mark Burley than I was 2 weeks ago against Jeremy Hellickson. And just quickly, looking at that series is why I am down on the Jays going forward. You know, you look at the Rays, they have Jake Odorizzi, Alex Cobb, and Jeremy Hellickson. And that we miss Matt Moore and David Price is hurt. All those guys are young. All those guys are elite. And we have Dickey, who's fine but old. Ortiz, who's not fine and just as old. And Burley, who's just as old as well. There's no young talent here.
Marcus Stroman.
Yeah. Give him some steroids this time, not whatever he was taking last time. Anyway, after that, they go to Baltimore comes to town, and we'll see Brandon Morrow against the terrible Jair Jurgens.
That should be fun.
This might be his first start of the year. He's awful.
Second, I believe.
Oh, he sucks. So that's positive.
Ooh, Friday, it's a matchup of to be announced and to be announced. That should be good.
ESPN has it as Dickey versus Tillman, but you were saying that is going to be
Chad Jenkins, I'd assume. Because you're not going to have Dickey start on 4 days or 3 days rest.
No. Oh,
maybe they will.
Well, they have Jenkins on Saturday. That doesn't make any sense. So it'll probably be Jenkins against Chris Tillman.
Because ESPN probably has it that Dickey was supposed to pitch tomorrow. Yesterday.
That's right.
Which
that's...
is would be today. Okay, today. Sunday.
Sunday. There we go. So it'll probably be Jenkins versus Tillman and then Dickey versus Garcia. Freddie Garcia. Oh, man, I haven't been paying attention this week. When did Freddie Garcia get to the Orioles?
I believe he was called up a few weeks ago. Last year was spring training. Remember when Garcia got hurt? He had a line drive right off his head. I was, like, a few rows away from that. I was nasty. You saw him coming out of the game. His head was, like, all bruised up. It was huge.
He's fat and kind of sucks.
He used to be a Yankee. He sucks.
Yeah, he used to be almost everybody. I saw him pitch with the Mariners. Live, but that was a long time ago. And then it finishes up on Sunday with Ramon Ortiz again, staff ace Ramon Ortiz against Miguel Gonzalez.
If there's any pitcher I want pitching for the Jays twice in 1 week, it is Ramon Ortiz.
Of course.
Because he is our ace.
How can it go wrong? Nothing worse could happen.
Ramon Ortiz and his mid-2s ERA.
Sustainable, too.
It's not a small sample at all.
No. No, and it's not hidden by the fact that he doesn't strike anybody out and kind of walks people just as frequently. It's a sad time, Jays fans. It's a sad time.
But at least you are not a Marlin fan. And on that note, I believe that's the show.
Yeah, I think we're done. I'm tired of depressing everybody. Housekeeping. You can follow me on Twitter at Mentoc, MENTOCH. Where can they follow you?
At Gideon Turk, GIDEONTURK, and at Blue Jays Plus, BLU.
You don't need to spell Blue Jays
Plus. Jays Plus.
So, yeah, we'll be back next week, and go Jays, go.
Try to do what those ladies tell us. Get shot down cause you're overzealous. Play hard to get females, get jealous. Okay, smarty, go to a party. Girls are scantily clad, are showing body. A chick walks by, you wish you could sex her, but you're standing on the wall like you was Poindexter. Next day's function, high-class luncheon. Food is served in your stone-cold munching. Music comes on, people start to dance, but then you ate so much, you nearly split your pants. A girl starts walking, guys start gawking. Sits down next to you and starts talking. Says she wanna dance cause she likes to groove. So come on, fatso, and just bust the move. Just bust the move.